us, tell us how to make ourselves more secure in the 21st century.
Good evening, and welcome to this evening's program of the Commonwealth Club of California. My name is Gerald Harris. I am chair of the club's Technology and Science Member-Led Forum, and I will be your host for this evening's program. The Commonwealth Club is America's longest-standing public forum. We are proud to maintain our focus on informing the public and our members on key local, national, and international developments. This is the place to be in the know. The focus of the Technology and Society Member-Led Forum is to expose members and attendees to current and emerging developments in science and technology, and in the process, generate thinking and ideas about the use and commercialization of technology in creating a better world for all of us. We welcome and encourage your participation in all of our programs, and more information can be found at our website, www.commonwealthclub.org. We welcome all of you who are remotely viewing this program via our online channel or who may be listening through the media. And now to today's wonderful speaker. Dr. Kerry Gates is a Senior Vice President and Principal Engineer in the Global Information Security Department at Bank of America. Dr. Gates joined the bank in October of 2018. Prior to joining the bank, Kerry has worked at a startup company as well as being a distinguished engineer at both Dell Corporation and CA Technologies. She has also been a systems engineer at Dalhousie University in Canada, where she received her PhD in 2006. She has over 50 peer-reviewed publications and over 20 awarded patents in the computer and network security field. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Kerry Gates.
Thank you very much for the introduction. As I get started, I'd like to tell you a little bit about Bank of America before starting. We are one of the world's leading financial institutions. We are headquartered in Charlotte, North Carolina. We have a presence across the United States, and we are also operating in 35 countries globally. I have been with the bank now for about 5 years, and the role I have at the bank is really to be that bridge between the academic world and industry. So I work with university partners in order to pursue longer-term, harder problems and try to solve them and bring that information back into the bank. So with that as a basis, what I want to talk to you about today is what is information security and what is it that criminals do? I'll provide a number of statistics in the area of cybercrime and talk about a lot of the scams that will target you as individuals. I'll also work through some scenarios with you so you can understand how they will appear to you, and then conclude with some tips to be able to protect yourself. My goal with this is not to scare you with all the scary statistics and scams, but to make sure that you leave empowered with the knowledge that you can recognize what a scam is going to look like and what a criminal might use to try to get you to separate from your money, for example. Before continuing, I do need to provide a bit of a disclaimer. What I am providing here is information. It is not meant to be consultative in nature. I'm hoping that you can take this information and go and learn more about information security and how it is that you can protect yourself. I'll be focused very much on you as individuals and how you can protect yourself, what kind of scams you will see, and not looking at, for example, how it is that a company can protect itself. So with that, let's talk about what is information security. Information security is the practice of protecting information from unauthorized access, use, disclosure, disruption, modification, perusal, inspection, recording, or destruction. There are really three different tenets that make up the basis for information security in order to try to protect your data from essentially anything that might happen to it that you wouldn't want to have happen. And those three tenets are confidentiality, integrity, and availability. Confidentiality refers to trying to keep your information secret so that no one else can see it or be able to use it. Integrity is talking about keeping your information correct. No one else can make changes to it. They can't delete it. And availability means that your information is always available whenever you need to use it. What does that mean for you as an individual? Let's take the example of a bank account. Confidentiality means that only you or someone you delegate is able to actually see information about your bank account. It could be your bank balance, for example. That is kept secret. Integrity means that only you are able to make any changes to your banking information, such as updating your phone number or your address. And availability means that your bank account is always available to you whenever you need to have that access. So that's talking about the security side. Let's take a second and take a look at what the criminals see and how we think about criminal activity. And I'm really going to focus here on fraud and scams, because that's what you as individuals are most likely to encounter. And they are different. So what is fraud? Fraud is when a criminal obtains your personal or financial information and uses it for their own personal gain. This could be something such as you have shopped someplace, you provided your credit card, it's an online shopping, that site was breached, and so now your credit card is being sold on the dark web. Another criminal has gained access to that credit card and is now using it for fraudulent purchases. That would be an example of fraud. In contrast, a scam is when a criminal convinces you to either send money or provide personal information that they can then use for their own gain. But you think that the transaction you were performing was legitimate in nature. And so they've convinced you were doing something that you should do that is legitimate, but in fact is not. As an example here, say you purchase something online. You provide the money for that purchase, but the item never comes to you. That would be an example of a scam. And there are several different risks that come out to people through these different types of scams. You could suffer from, obviously, from monetary loss from these, but it also could be other threats or other risks, such as information compromise or identity theft. So what I'm going to do now is take a look at some different statistics that we've seen in the headlines with regards to cybercrime. I'm going to take a step up and say cybercrime broadly at this point, not just at the individual level, to give you a sense of how big is this problem that we are facing. So the first stat, 60%. That is the percentage of breaches involving vulnerabilities with available but unapplied patches. What does that mean? On your phone, for example, or your laptop, do you ever get a notice that says, I have an update for your operating system? Click yes to install. What that's doing is saying there is a patch to your operating system. Oftentimes, patches are released because there has been some kind of a security vulnerability discovered, and we know that criminals can then use that security vulnerability to break into your machine, to install malware or something. And so you're being asked to install this patch to then fix that security vulnerability, and that will protect you from criminals being able to leverage that. But as we see from the statistic, the majority of time that breaches happen, people have not actually applied the patches that they need. And so it's very important to apply patches, not that it's a perfect protection, but it does make the job harder for criminals. 1 in 36. That is the number of mobile devices with high-risk apps installed. In this case, we define a high-risk app as being one of two things. Either your mobile device is likely to contain malware, or you have rooted or have a jailbroken device, meaning that you've removed the security features on, for example, your phone in order to install software that otherwise the phone would not have allowed you to do. These are considered high risk, and 1 in 36 mobile devices fall into this category. $40 million. That is the largest ransomware payout in 2021. What is ransomware? Imagine that you receive an email, for example, it asks you to install a file and run it. So you do that. You download the file, you execute the file, and what it does is it encrypts your entire hard drive. What do I mean by encrypts? It turns it into a secret code, so you can't understand what you're seeing. Your data is now in a form that doesn't make any sense to you, and you have no way to access it or get it back to the original. There is actually a secret code that you can use, a secret key, that will provide it back to the original form, but you need that secret key to do it. Remember when you were in school as a kid and you wanted to write a note to a friend of yours, but if the teacher got the note, you didn't want the teacher to know what you were saying. And so you developed a code, and it might be something like, I'm going to take each letter, I'm going to offset it by 3. So instead of an A, I'll do D. Instead of a B, I'll do an E. And use that as a code and give that note to your friend. That's the similar idea to encrypting. Your friend gets the note, they know how to go back to the original form because they know that was an offset of 3. So if they see a D, they know it actually means an A. Now, imagine that this was done on your computer, but the code was much more mathematically complex and difficult to reverse back to the original. In that case, you need to have the secret key to get back. So if you've installed this ransomware and it has encrypted your entire hard drive, you will then get a note from the criminal saying, I will give you that secret key if you pay me this much money. They're holding your data ransom, essentially. In this case, there was a company that fell victim to ransomware, and they needed to pay $40 million in order to get access to their data again. 600%. That is the increase of cybercrime as a whole since the beginning of the global pandemic. The global pandemic was only 3 years ago, so that is a huge increase in a short amount of time. And it gives you an indication of what cybercriminals are doing to be able to actually leverage changes in the environment and take advantage of them in order to actually make more money. 1 in 4,200. That is the proportion of emails in 2020 that were phishing attempts. What is phishing? Phishing is when you get an email that is trying to get you to do something that you wouldn't otherwise do, like click on a link or download a file, or try to get you to respond with information you normally would not provide. 1 in 4,200 might not sound like a lot, but think about how many emails there must be exchanged in the world on a daily basis. People talking within companies about something, or talking to people in other companies, or talking amongst friends and family. There's a huge amount of email that goes on daily. So 1 in 4,200 from a percentage might not seem great, but actually ends up being a huge number of phishing attempts. 64%. That is the percentage of Americans who have not checked to see if they've been affected by a data breach. And what I would encourage everyone here to do is to go and do an internet search for companies that will tell you if you've been impacted by a data breach, or for websites that will give you that information. This will tell you if, for example, you've worked with a company and that company has been compromised, and it might be that your credit card was compromised and is now publicly available or available on the dark web to criminals. It could be your username and password combination that's been breached. That one's particularly concerning because a lot of people will use the same username and password on multiple sites. And so imagine that you go to a news site online, you have a login, that username and password is breached. And then if you reuse that username and password at, for example, a banking site, a criminal will take that. They won't necessarily know you've reused it at a given banking site, but they'll try all the different sites until something actually works. And so that is one way that you can be compromised. So I encourage everyone, please do go out to see if you have been affected by a data breach. And also as part of that, don't use the same password on many different sites. 5,200. That is the average number of attacks experienced by internet-connected devices per month. That's a huge number. Imagine, again, like take my phone as an example. 5,200 attacks on average per month against just my phone. So imagine what you have for devices and how many attacks that actually means. I'll give you one last stat. $8.8 billion. That is the amount of loss that consumers reported in 2022 due to cybercrime. And to me, that number is staggering. And I really hope that by the end of this presentation, you will be better prepared to protect yourself so that you do not become one of that statistic. I'm going to take a step back to that 5,200 attacks per month statistic and ask you, on average, how many internet-connected devices do you think that a single household has? Less than 10, more than 10, but less than 25, more than 25? How many? According to a 2020 Statista report, they found that the average number of connected devices per household was 10. They expected that number to increase dramatically by 2025. I'll point out it's now 2023, so I imagine the number is higher than 10. And I started thinking about this, thinking 10 seems like a large number. And then I thought about it for my own household. I have a work laptop, a personal laptop, a phone, and an iPad. So there's 4 devices. My husband essentially has the same setup. Now we're up to 8. I had a new HVAC system installed recently. Now I have a thermostat that's connected to the internet. I have security cameras connected to the internet. I have a smart TV connected to the internet. So I'm already above 10 devices, and I'm only a 2-person household. If I think back to 5,200 attacks per device, And if there's more than 10 devices in a household, that is a huge number of attacks to my household in any given month. And I've given you a lot of statistics now of cybercrime in general. I'm going to come back to looking at you as an individual and as a consumer and saying, how is it that a criminal might try to attack you or convince you to be part of a scam or fraud? And one of the techniques they use is something called social engineering. Social engineering is when someone tries to trick you into divulging information or taking some action. And usually they'll use technology in order to do this kind of trick. It is psychological manipulation. They want to create a sense of urgency. You need to respond to something right away. So that's part of what they will use. They might use fear. If you don't do this, then this bad thing will happen. They could also use a reward. If you want to get this great thing to happen, you need to do this right now. In both of those cases, there's still that sense of urgency. You need to do this right now to either avoid something or get this reward. And that is what social engineers do, what criminals do to try to get you to then respond. And they will do this using multiple tools, in particular phishing, vishing, and smishing. They all sound very similar. They are very similar in nature, but it's really the medium that's being used that differentiates them. You've probably heard about phishing before. This has been around for decades now. And it's an email that you receive where you're being asked to do something, such as open a file or go to a particular website. And then that actually will trigger something that might be scam-related or fraud-related. Vishing is the same thing, except in that case, someone has called you. So it's using voice, hence the V. And smishing, again, is the same technique. You're getting a communication. You might be asked to click on a link, but it's coming in through a text or SMS message. Another way that someone might try to approach you in order to get you to be part of a scam or to take advantage of you would be through social media. So if you get a direct message through social media, people will use that as another way to reach out. So you need to be careful of all the different ways that someone can reach out to you and try to trick you into doing something that otherwise you would not want to do. One thing I'll point out here, if something feels off to you, it feels kind of fishy, it probably is. So one thing I would ask you to do is trust your instincts whenever you receive something unsolicited, either through email, voice, text message. Trust your instincts on it. So what are the ways that a criminal might try to trick you? What kind of social engineering techniques might they use? They might call or text or email pretending to be someone you know or trust. And that's not necessarily an individual that they're trying to pretend to be. It could be that they're pretending to be a company that you know or trust, such as a bank or a government agency. And by trying to pretend to be that person that you trust, they get your trust and you are more likely to then give them information that otherwise you would not have done. You might be asked to make decisions in a hurry or the person tries to scare you. This relates back very much to the social engineering, that sense of urgency. They don't want you to stop and think. They want you to make a decision right away. And then maybe afterwards you might realize, oh, wait, I shouldn't have done that. But they really want you in the moment to make a decision that benefits them. You might be asked to send money in unusual ways, such as gift cards. No legitimate business or government agency will ever ask you to pay using gift cards. If you are asked to pay using a gift card, that is a big red flag. Be careful. So why is it that criminals like gift cards then? There's really three different reasons. First of all, it's quick cash for them, right? They get a gift card, they can use it right away, especially if it's, for example, a Visa card or something. The transaction is largely irreversible. Once you give someone a gift card, it's not easy to then take that back or stop any transaction using it. And the criminal can remain anonymous. You don't have to specify when you give someone a gift card who it is that you're giving it to. So now the criminal has a sense of anonymity as well. And so you need to be careful about that. Criminals might also email you asking you to click on a link or download a file. Again, we've mentioned this in the context of phishing. It might also be through a text message. Or they could call you or direct message you. If you get something that is unsolicited, that is another key to be careful with what information you're providing, unless you are certain that you know the person that is contacting you and that it is a legitimate contact. So if it's unsolicited, that's something else that should be a warning sign for you. So with that, I'm going to go through a number of different scams that might target you. And again, the purpose here is not to scare you, but to give you a sense of the broad number of techniques that criminals are now using to try to target you. And some of them might actually be surprising. I find some of them quite interesting. And it will give you a sense of the different ways that someone might target you. The first one I'm going to mention are fake rentals. In this case, as an example, you're looking for an apartment, you find the perfect apartment online and is within your price range. If it sounds too good to be true, unfortunately, it often is. And so that's one thing to take into consideration. It doesn't mean that the apartment doesn't exist. It means be careful. So you're looking at this wonderful apartment. You want to get it. You reach out to the person to put out the ad listing the apartment. And they say, yes, it's still available. It would be great to rent it out to you. I would love to show it to you. Unfortunately, I'm not able to do so right now. I'm traveling this week. That's also a red flag. If you're not able to see the unit in person, that is a red flag. It might be legitimate. The person is traveling and they will be happy to show it to you when you get back. But say they go on and do a bit more of a hard sell with it. It is an absolutely wonderful unit. I'm happy to show it to you in a week when I'm back. But honestly, I think it's going to be gone and off the market by then. If you really want it, you should put in an application now. So if you're starting to get that hard sell, again, there's that sense of urgency creeping in. And that fear, you might lose this apartment if you don't do this action, if you don't provide first and last month's rent as a deposit right now. And so be careful about something like this. That could be a sign that this is actually a scam and not a place that actually exists. And it would be horrible to show up thinking you're moving into your ideal dream apartment and either it doesn't exist or it does exist, but it has not been rented out to you. And it's not just apartments this will happen with. It could be with hotel rooms. It could be with short-term vacation rentals. It could be with flights. It could be with cars. Any kind of rental, be very careful. Make sure that you are dealing with a reputable company when you are trying to rent something. Another type of scam, employment offers. How is it that a criminal could use an employment offer to scam someone? Well, imagine they put up a job ad and you respond to it. And they say, oh, you are perfect. We would love to have you go through the employment process and the interviews and everything. We just need a small application fee first. That's something to be cautious of. If someone has a job that they've posted, they're not going to ask you for an application fee. They want you to apply. They want to find the best person. They're not going to put that in as a barrier. So again, someone is asking for your financial information in a very unusual situation. Something else they might do is say, wow, you are absolutely perfect for this job. We really want to hire you. We don't even need to interview you. We'll hire you right now. We'll send you the paperwork you need to fill out to start, and we'll have you start on Monday. If you don't get interviewed, be very, very suspicious as well. Because what they're doing here is they'll provide the paperwork that seems normal for applying for a job. And it could be asking for things like your social security number. This would be normal to report to the IRS. It could be asking for bank information so they can do a direct deposit of your paycheck. Now they've gathered this information about you and can use it for their own financial gain. So be careful about employment offers where the process hasn't seemed quite right. You're asked for an application fee or you're given a job opportunity without an interview. What you can do is also go and confirm, is this actually a real job being offered? So go outside of where you're seeing the job to, for example, a website for the company you've applied for. Do they have that job listed there? If you've seen the job ad on a social media site, how recent is that social media site? Is it something that's been set up recently or has it been in existence for a long time? And so try to determine how legitimate might something be if you think that this actually might be a legitimate offer. Another type of scam, service outage. In this case, you might receive an email that your online service is about to be cut off because the information that we have for your credit card on file is no longer valid. Please update your credit card information right away. Again, there's that sense of urgency. You need to update your credit card information right away. That sense of fear. You're going to lose this service if you don't go and do this right away. This is a fairly common one that people receive, for example, in emails. All of us have online, I shouldn't say all, but probably all of us have online subscription services. And so we might not even think if we get an email that looks like it's from an online subscription that we have, we might just trust, oh yeah, that probably is due about now. I should go and update my credit card. So be careful if you get something like this. If you think it's legitimate, don't click on the links in the email. Go outside, go to the website separately, and log in there and update your information if it needs to be updated.
another type of scam, personal loans. Again, I'm going to fall back on the, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And if it's an unsolicited application saying you've been approved for a personal loan, be suspicious of that. Especially if it's a financial institution that you don't deal with, or not even a financial institution that's making the loan offer. If it is a financial institution that you do deal with and you think this might be legitimate, even though it sounds too good to be true, again, step back and reach out through some other medium. Go to their website. Look up the contact information you can find there for that institution. Call them and say, I received this loan offer. I would love to take you up on it. And if it's legitimate, you have a great loan now. But if it's not legitimate, you've just managed to protect yourself. Unpaid tax bills. This was a fairly common one a while ago as well. You would get a phone call saying you have an unpaid tax bill and we need you to pay it immediately or else some bad thing will happen. We'll start to garnish your wages. We'll put a lien on your house. Probably goes without saying if you're up to date on your taxes that you should be like, yeah, whatever. But if you're at all questioning it, did I forget to pay last year? And criminals are very good at this. They might get that question into your head. If the caller is pressuring you to pay immediately, be suspicious. You are not likely to get a call from a government agency that says you need to pay right now. And so be suspicious of that. If you think there might be an unpaid tax bill, again, go to the website separately, log into that government site, determine have you paid your taxes or not. Social media. Someone might reach out to you over social media and start asking about financial or personal information. Be careful of this, even if you think you know the person. Because you might know the person, but it actually is an account that's been compromised by a criminal. And so it might not be your friend reaching out to you, but a criminal using their account to reach out to you. So again, be very careful about what kind of information you provide over social media. The other thing to be careful about these kinds of scams are the social media marketplaces. A friend of mine was taken by this. She had a dress for sale, so she put it up on social media. She had someone respond saying, I love the dress, I'd love to buy it. And worked out to send her $100 for the dress. She sent a check for $100. My friend received the check and was like, but wait, the dress is only $50. So she contacted the buyer back about the mistake. And the buyer's like, oh my gosh, I am so sorry. I was just so rushed. I was going by memory. I thought it was $100. I'll tell you what, just send me the dress and the $50 difference and you can have the check and we're good. So my friend did that. She sent off the dress. She sent the $50. The catch here is that then the check bounced. In the end, what happened with my friend is she was out $50 that she sent with the dress and the dress. So there are scams here that you need to be careful about.
This is the Commonwealth Club of California radio program, featuring a discussion of cybercrime with Kerry Gates of Bank of America and our moderator, Gerald Harris. I'm Gloria Duffy. You can keep in touch with the Commonwealth Club, our events, our travel program, and more by subscribing to our email newsletter at commonwealthclub.org/email. Now, back to our program.
Another couple of scams I want to mention. One is romance scams, and this one I find particularly heartbreaking. You meet someone online. They seem amazing. They have the same hobbies you do. They have the same interests. If you want to settle down, they're also interested in settling down. Everything seems to match. They're a wonderful person. They're very polite, very kind. They give you lots of compliments. It's a great relationship. There's only one catch. You are never able to actually meet them in person. And it could sound like a very legitimate reason. Maybe they say they're in the military and they're stationed at a remote military base. Or they have a job that has them stationed someplace remotely, like on an oil rig. And so now you need to be careful. And it could still be a wonderful relationship. That's not necessarily your red flag. The red flag comes in when, after that, something happens and they ask you for money. Maybe they have an aunt who's sick. And so be careful if you've met someone, they seem wonderful, but you can't meet them in person, and then they start asking for money. It's a big red flag. Related to what I just mentioned, it was cryptocurrencies. There are also cryptocurrency scams out there. And it's not just through romance. It could be that you get a text That's completely random. You don't even know who it's from. And it looks like a legitimate text that would have been sent to someone else that the person knew. And so you respond saying, hey, wrong number. And then that person responds back and starts up a conversation with you. That person will then try to gain your trust. And then through gaining your trust,